Hello, this is Wendy Bauer with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 23, 2015. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article by Tony Reed, Heating Bills Likely to Be Lower, from Decatur. It's not even Thanksgiving, and Ameren, Illinois is handing its central Illinois customers an early Christmas present, cheaper natural gas to heat their homes and businesses. The utility announced last week that natural gas prices for the 2015-16 heating system will keep the gas supply portion of the bill, the cost of the gas itself, some 20% lower than last year's already historically low prices. It will add up to savings of roughly $63 on the coming winter season heating bill, given current delivery charges for the customer who uses 569 therms, a typical amount. This will be the third straight year of deflating natural gas charges as America's gas supply industry taps new reserves and new piping systems allow easier distribution and delivery. Ameren, Illinois said its customers paid an average of 54 cents a therm in the 2014-15 heating season. The new prices for 2015-16 cut that to a range of 42 to 44 cents per therm. The utility credits the price drop to those rising supplies and its own hedging policy of buying gas at summer doldrums prices ready for the next winter. Ameren, Illinois banks the gas in 12 underground storage fields. We're pleased that our price hedging and storage strategies will keep supply-side costs low again this winter, said Ken Dothage, the utility's gas company director. But as the first real cold snap of the winter blows in over the weekend, the utility warns customers to think carefully about their thermostat settings. Cheaper natural gas still turns into inflated heating bills if your furnace is burning more and more of it. The utility recommends setting thermostats at 68 degrees or lower. Every degree set downward adds up to a 3% savings on heating costs. Fit a programmable thermostat and use it at lower settings when you're asleep or away. Using a ceiling fan to pull warm air away from the ceiling will make rooms more comfortable. Other advice includes lowering your water heater setting to 120 degrees and stepping up your home's insulation. Layers should be 9 to 15 inches thick in central Illinois attics. We just want to remind customers to take these actions to be more energy efficient and keep those bills lower, said Marceline Love, Ameren, Illinois spokeswoman. Also from the front page, from Dalton City, Britannia rules lanes for motorcycle fan. Bob Rutherford gets his motor running, heads out on the highway, and goes looking for a dose of adrenaline in the past tense. And he always has a head start. The retired 68-year-old farmer from rural Dalton City restores classic motorcycles. And while he loves Harley-Davidson's thrill products, he has long cultivated a particular thankfulness for ancient imported British bikes that raced the pulse when he wore a younger man's clothes. Names such as Triumph and BSA were shorthand for Bugs in Your Teeth Adventure for Rutherford, who got his first Brit bike, a 650cc Triumph, when he was 17. And while no man can outrace time's winged chariot hurrying near, Rutherford's motorcycle stable, filled with 7 time machines up to 50 years old, give him an opportunity to look back in splendor down memory lane's 2-lane blacktop. To me, a motorcycle is either a single or twin cylinder, and it's got some vibration, it's got some noise to it, and it has personality that you absolutely lack with any of these new machines today, explains Rutherford. When I get on to one of those old British bikes, I am 20 or 30 years younger, and I act like it too. Marla, who married him 46 years ago after waiting for him to come home from Marine Corps combat duties in Vietnam, has witnessed the spontaneous outpouring of joy firsthand. I've seen him a few times going down the blacktop, no hands on the handlebars, leaning back, she says. It makes her husband sound like the spirit of ecstasy, the figure with swept back arms that Rolls-Royce uses for hood ornaments. The Rolls-Royce figure leans forward rather than back, but it's the same idea. Joy confronting the open road. Rutherford says the rumbling, rough-and-ready Brit bikes were and are a great way to get out there and enjoy it. The imported machines would eventually have their lunch eaten by a flood of technically superior rivals that poured in from Japan and which enjoyed accelerating sales from sea to shining sea. The self-taught restorer, who can handle everything from engine rebuilds to bodywork, has some of the triumphant Land of the Rising Sun machines, too, such as a pristine Yamaha from 1977. My interest is in all kinds of old, interesting bikes, Rutherford says. This Yamaha, for example, has a 500cc single-cylinder engine, and it was imported into the United States for only 2 years. He shows a visitor along a gleaming row of machines he has painstakingly revived, their sparkle contrasting sharply with a grungy-looking 1970 BSA 650cc twin-cylinder model and a 1972 Triumph Trident three-cylinder bike, both newer acquisitions awaiting the caress of the master's loving hand. Looming at the ends of the row, and standing in stark contrast, are pristine and practical everyday cruisers, such as a 1982 Harley FL Series Bagger he's converted to a trike, and a 2005 Harley Road King fitted with a sidecar. Rutherford explains the stabilized machines make longer rides easier since he has had to come to terms with the rise of health issues such as Parkinson's disease. He is okay on the Brit bikes for short trips, but likes to know the big Harleys will stay upright on their own for longer journeys, and with a big smile he says, "Both hogs run like a dream." It's clearly hard for any red-blooded American not to carry a place in their heart that is forever Harley, an iconic name that had its own near-death experience fighting off Japanese competition in the late 1970s. And Rutherford, for all his love of basic British engineering, clearly knows that home steel is where the heart is. His wife tells a 15-year-old story about the time he was taken ill at the dining table, slumping to the floor in a state of collapse in the grips of what appeared to be a heart attack, later found to be a nasty digestive ailment. Paramedics arrived, and as they were treating him, he beckoned his wife over and lifted his oxygen mask so he could speak. "I'm thinking, God, these are his last words," recalls Marla, 68, who switches to a hoarse whisper to imitate her, at the time, ashen-faced husband. "And he looks at me and says, 'Don't sell my Harley.'" And from the local page of the Decatur Herald and Review, "Work Should Ease Sewer Backups" by Allison Petty from Decatur. After enduring decades of sewer backups, the Nelson Park neighborhood is moving toward relief. The Decatur City Council approved a $147,000 contract last week for design of a storm drainage system and sanitary sewer separation project in the neighborhood. "The project is long overdue," Public Works Director Rick Marley told the council. "There are numerous homes in this neighborhood that suffer from backups. The only way to fix it is with this project," he said. "And they've been suffering for a long time. The need was first identified in a 1966 drainage study." Marley said the combined sewers are much too small at 8 inches in diameter. "The minimum size they should be for a neighborhood of that size is 24 inches," he said. The city planned to tackle the work in 2012 as a capital project. Preliminary designs led to a $4 million cost estimate, and the city put the project on hold until it could identify sufficient funding. Last year, the city was awarded a state grant to build a bioswale that would allow water to drain more naturally through Nelson Park and into Lake Decatur. But the grant funding was suspended in January, Marley said, with Governor Bruce Rauner and the legislature continuing to wrangle over a budget. Marley said the city decided to proceed with a plan to install conventional sewer drainage. "It's an essential project," he said. "It should not be delayed." Design work is slated for completion in November 2016. The city intends to apply for a low-interest loan through the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency and enter construction in spring 2017. Money to repay the loan would come from the sanitary sewer user fees and storm water fees, which the council approved in April 2014. This is going to be one of the first improvement projects that we're going to be able to pay for with the storm water fee, Marley said. And an article by Tony Reed from Decatur, Thrill of the Hunt Attracts Kids at Rock Springs. Turkey in the Straw became Turkey in the Rock Springs Nature Center on Sunday, where a scavenger hunt helped children gobble up knowledge about America's favorite holiday entree. The event was aimed at kids from 2 to 13, and a flock of 15 eager participants and parents gave it a whirl. Weekend naturalist Megan Baskerville launched the proceedings by reading aloud from a book about wild turkeys and their short lives. It turns out that nature, red in tooth and claw, had given the turkey a lot of predators to worry about, long before the pilgrims sailed into view in 1620, looking for a new Jerusalem. Fast forward to 2015, and one of the new apex turkey predators turns out to be 4-year-old Charlotte Patterson from Mount Zion, who nods vigorously when asked what she thinks of turkey dinners. Oh, she likes turkey, said her mom, Chrissy Patterson, 32. Turkey sandwiches are her favorite food. After a crash course Sunday in turkey lives, habitat, and their short hop flying abilities, the scavenger hunt was on. Charlotte hit the ground running, dashing from one clue to the next, while Mom and her dad, Andy, weighed down with Charlotte's sleeping 2-year-old sibling, Avery, struggled to keep up. A series of 7 clues hiding in plain sight were tied into aspects of turkey life and included one dash outside into the chill air before landing back inside at a rewards table laden with food, drinks, and little keepsakes. Charlotte and Avery, now awakened and interested, would end up with a ceramic leaf among other goodies and seemed well pleased with a turkey hunt in the great indoors. We come out to Rock Springs a lot, said Chrissy Patterson. They have lots of events the kids can be involved in, and they learn while having fun. Her husband, who grew up in Decatur, says it's surprising how many people don't know about Rock Springs or its programs, with something going on almost every weekend. We pay attention because we like to get the kids doing different things as much as we can, added Andy Patterson, 33. His wife says adults discover stuff too. I'm learning things about turkeys I didn't know, she added. One surprising Thanksgiving factoid, according to the Smithsonian, is that turkeys were not the centerpiece of the first feast in 1621. Top of the menu was goose and duck, and maybe even passenger pigeons. And from Springfield, Kurt Erickson, Lee, Springfield Bureau Chief. Lincoln Museum Chief Search in-house. Although the state-run Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum is promoted by the state as a world-class institution, Governor Bruce Rauner's administration is not conducting a formal search for someone to run the facility. More than a month after ousting Eileen Makovich as director of the Springfield-based facility, a spokeswoman for the governor said Rauner is not hiring a search firm to fill the $150,000 per year post. Rather, spokeswoman Catherine Kelly said unnamed employees within the governor's office are consulting with experts in the field and researching possible candidates on their own. We hope to have someone in place as soon as a qualified and appropriate candidate is identified, Kelly said. In October, Rauner accepted Makovich's resignation on the same day he moved to oust Illinois Historic Preservation Agency Director Amy Martin, who had feuded with Makovich over the management of the museum. In the aftermath, Makovich told the Chicago Sun-Times that she served at the will of the governor and didn't share his perspective on how the museum should operate. The governor indicated that he wanted to go in a different direction, and so I felt it was appropriate to resign, Makovich told the newspaper. Former Museum Chief of Staff Nadine O'Leary is serving as acting director while the in-house search for a new director continues. Makovich, 76, formerly served as executive director of the Abraham Lincoln Bicentennial Commission. She was the fifth director of the museum, which opened in 2003. She replaced interim director Jan Grimes in 2010 after the previous library and museum chief, Rick Beard, was charged with shoplifting. The museum's first director was Richard Norton Smith, who served 3 years. Former state historian Thomas Schwartz served as interim before Beard's hiring. In filling his cabinet in his first year in office, Rauner has sought out what he calls superstars from across the nation. Among his hires have been former Hawaii Governor Linda Lingle and Trey Childress, a former chief operating officer of Georgia. The administration is not offering a timeline for how long the hiring process will take. We will announce something when we have something to announce, Kelly said. And from Mattoon, Tree Festival benefits Cancer Center Fund. Patrice Clark Runyon inspired many around her, devoting her life to serving those with special needs. Runyon, who died from cancer at age 43 in December 2014, worked as an early childhood transition coordinator at Eastern Illinois Area of Special Education and volunteered at Camp New Hope. She had a special place in her heart for people with special needs, said her friend Kim Uphoff, who is vice president for Sarah Bush Lincoln Development. Runyon's friends decorated a Christmas tree titled Inspiration and submitted it for sale Saturday during the 17th annual Festival of Trees at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. Proceeds from the event will support Sarah Bush's Building Hope, a $3.5 million effort to fund the construction of a new regional cancer center on the health center's campus. Uphoff and Paula Birdsong said they helped decorate their tree with inspirational sayings and ornaments. These included a quote from author Vivian Green, "Life isn't about waiting for the storm to pass, it's about learning to dance in the rain." The Lumpkin Family Center for Health Education was filled during the festival with Christmas trees, wreaths, centerpieces, and other items being sold to raise funds for the Regional Cancer Center. Anna Elise Price said she and her sister, anesthesiologist Dr. Virginia Price, decorated a tree for the festival to support the community. She said once the Regional Cancer Center opens, Sarah Bush Lincoln will have space available for loved ones to stay alongside cancer patients while they are receiving chemotherapy treatments. The two sisters decorated their Family Memories tree with ornaments bearing photos of the Coles County Courthouse in Charleston, the Burger King and the Peterson House in Mattoon, the Great Pumpkin Patch in Arthur, and other area landmarks. The Family Memories tree also is adorned with small picture frames so that the buyers can add photos of their own to the decorations. Kathy Clark, chairwoman of the 2015 festival, said the event brings in a variety of Christmas trees and other decorations for community members to choose from for the holidays. Judy Jones said she started making her cross-stitched ornaments in February for her Christmas tree wreath, 12 Days of Christmas. Each of the pillow-like ornaments bears an image from a familiar song, such as A Maid A-Milking. Laughing, Jones recalls that her first attempt to stitch a partridge in a pear tree looked more like a Thanksgiving turkey. And the local page briefs for Monday from Moequa, Casey's makes delivery. Staff and customers at Casey's General Store in Moequa recently got a surprise delivery, a newborn baby. A customer from Pena was using the restroom when she went into labor and gave birth early on the morning of November 16th. She was assisted by the manager and assistant manager, and ambulance crews arrived to take mom and baby to a Decatur hospital. Moequa Police Chief Rob Maynard said he arrived there after everybody was gone, but it must have been quite a scene. All the coffee shop drinkers had been there, he said. I had gotten a call from a local pastor saying there is a lady we believe delivered in the bathroom because we can now hear the baby crying in there. Maynard said mother and baby, which he understood as a girl, were doing well. They did not call the baby Casey, he said. Her name was already picked out. also from Decatur, jewelry and TV stolen. A 50-inch television and jewelry valued in the hundreds of dollars were stolen from a Decatur home. Police reports said the items were taken from a house in the 200 block of East Cleveland Avenue between 9 p.m. Friday and 7 a.m. Saturday. A purse, valued at $200, also was stolen. Continuing with the briefs from the local page. From Chicago, parolee funding sought. The number of Illinois inmates released on parole has increased as lawmakers look to reduce the prison population. But funding to help those parolees stay out of trouble has dropped dramatically during the state's budget crisis. The Illinois Department of Corrections said the number of parolees has grown 14% in the past 4 years to more than 28,000. Republican Governor Bruce Rauner has set a goal to reduce Illinois' inmate population by one-fourth in the next decade, and has said that key to doing so is ensuring ex-offenders become productive members of society. Advocates say that if people getting out of prison have access to job training and transitional housing, their odds of not reoffending improve. Continuing with the briefs, from Galesburg, nursing home death. A former Galesburg nursing home employee faces a battery charge stemming from the death of an elderly nursing home patient. Claude Richard Chenal, 25, of Galesburg, appeared in court Friday on one count of aggravated battery of a senior citizen. Knox County State's Attorney John Pepmeyer said the victim was taken to a hospital October 10th with injuries to his face and neck that suggested he was attacked in the face and choked around his neck. The man died several weeks later. And finally, from the briefs on the local page, from Chicago, cold follows snow. A deep freeze set in across the Midwest on Sunday with low temperatures forecast in the single digits and a few below zero, turning the season's first major snow into ice that made some roads treacherous to travel. The National Weather Service reported temperatures in the single and low double digits Sunday in northern Illinois, including Chicago, where residents were digging out of more than 11 inches of snow, the highest November total in 120 years in the city. More than 130 flights were canceled on Sunday at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago. And also from the local page, meetings for Monday. Here is the week's schedule of government meetings and other activities of interest to the public in Decatur and Macon County. Today, Monday, November 23rd, Harristown Village Board of Trustees, 7 p.m. at 185 North Kembark Street. The Moroa City Council at 7 p.m., 120 B South Locust Street. NAACP Decatur Branch, Executive Board, 6 p.m., Branch, 7 p.m., Dr. George Coates Community Center at 550 South Greenwood. On Tuesday, the Long Creek Township Board of Trustees at 5:30 p.m., Township Board Room 2610 Salem School Road in Decatur. Macon County Board Justice Committee at 3 p.m., Room 514 Macon County Office Building, 141 South Main Street in Decatur. And the Mount Zion Parks and Recreation Commission at 5:15 p.m., Village Hall, 1400 Mount Zion Parkway. And from the opinion page, let's be realistic about fighting against ISIS. After a bloody series of terrorist attacks, the natural impulse is to respond with overwhelming force to make sure they never happen again. The 9/11 carnage prompted a U.S. invasion of Afghanistan to smash al-Qaeda, which carried out the attacks, and remove the Taliban, which furnished the plotters a safe refuge. The Paris attacks have spurred new calls for a change in U.S. strategy toward the Islamic State, also known as ISIS, which occupies large sections of Iraq and Syria. But this is not a new American war. It's the one we have been pursuing since August 2014. And the group's newly demonstrated ability to slaughter people well beyond the Middle East does not mean the options for fighting it have improved. The two main ideas coming from presidential candidates are a no-fly zone, championed by Hillary Clinton and others, and a ground invasion proposed by Jeb Bush and some of the GOP rivals. Neither was a good idea before Paris, and neither has improved with time. It's easy to forget that a no-fly zone would have little effect on the Islamic State, which has no air force. If anything, it would help the group. This step would affect only the Syrian government and its Russian ally in their fight against insurgents, which include the Islamic State. If our primary goal is to topple Syrian President Bashar Assad, a no-fly zone has a certain logic. But if the highest priority is crippling the Islamic State, it would be self-defeating. It would also create the risk of shooting down a Russian military jet, sparking a showdown with a nuclear superpower. Toppling Assad would carry grave hazards. In 2013, then Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Martin Dempsey warned, "Should the regime's institutions collapse in the absence of a viable opposition, we could inadvertently empower extremists, notably the Islamic State." A ground invasion would pose dangers that should be familiar by now. Among them, a huge escalation from our initial commitment has happened in Afghanistan, where the U.S. troop presence ballooned from 5,200 in 2002 to 30,000 in 2008 to 100,000 in 2010. Getting into a ground war is a lot easier than winning one. U.S. troops can do more to inflame than to suppress enmity. The fantasy common among those seeking the White House is total victory. Bush vowed to build a coalition to take out ISIS with overwhelming force. Clinton said her mission is not to deter or contain ISIS, but to defeat and destroy ISIS. Marco Rubio said, "When I am president, what I will do to defeat ISIS is very simple, whatever it takes." They imagine we can vanquish it as we did Imperial Japan. But the Islamic State is not an established, unified nation-state. It's a diffuse entity that can migrate across borders and generate followers and affiliated groups in other places, as it has done already in Egypt and Libya. No country has more experience fighting vicious terrorists than Israel, which has learned that chasing total victory is like trying to drink the ocean dry. In 2006, it invaded Lebanon to go after Hezbollah, which was firing rockets into Israel. The stated goal was to remove the threat once and for all. It didn't succeed. The outcome was a draw that only diminished the threat for a while. A few months ago, the New York Times reported that Israel was preparing for what it sees as an almost inevitable next battle with Hezbollah. Israel has had similar experiences against Hamas, invading Gaza 3 times in the past 7 years, but choosing not to attempt to dislodge the radical group from power. If Israel is unable or unwilling to eliminate such potential enemies on its borders, the U.S. is not likely to be able to obliterate the Islamic State. The better option is to use air power and other means to persistently punish, harass, disrupt, and contain the group, ensuring it can't plan terrorism unimpeded. We might even want to look for ways to work with Russia and Iran. Over time, we can hope to curtail the danger. The Islamic State presents the sort of vexing challenge once referred to by the late Israeli Prime Minister Shimon Peres. "If a problem has no solution," he said, "it may not be a problem, but a fact, not to be solved, but to be coped with over time." Sometimes the key to enhancing security is knowing what not to do. We will take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, November 23rd, 2015. Please stay tuned.